remember to subscribe and share. Novelist Donna M. Cameron is an Orgy-nominated radio dramatist, an award-winning playwright, a short film writer, and an experienced actress. Her first novel, Beneath the Mother Tree, was listed as one of 2018's top Australian fiction reads by the Adelaide Advertiser. She's just published her second novel, The Rewilding, which is a breathless chase thriller with a warm ecological heart. And Donna M. Cameron just happens to be my guest today. Donna, welcome to Noel Anderson's 15 Minutes of Fame.
Thank you, Noel. Thanks for having me.
We have actually caught up recently at your book launch, which I want to get back to at the end of the podcast. But before that, of course, we knew one another from NIDA. Both went to the writing course there. What are your memories of NIDA before we start talking about writing?
I remember you at NIDA being very feisty.
Oh, nothing's changed.
Which I really respected.
We had a pact together and we decided, because everybody at one point, all the writers at one point, I think except for us, cried. And I remember we said, we're never going to cry over bad criticism of our work. Do you remember us talking about how it doesn't matter what they say about our work, we're never going to cry if they say bad things about us?
You know, I don't remember that, but I think I did cry one night.
Did you?
Oh, maybe I didn't.
I remember you as somebody who always held it back and was always strong, as you are now.
Thank you.
As a woman.
It was pretty brutal at times, wasn't it, that course?
It was brutal at times. It was brutal. Hey, but let's get on to talking about you and your writing. One of your favourite books was The Secret Garden, which apparently you loved as a child. I'm wondering if that book in particular has influenced your writing today.
Do you know what? I think it has, and I only realised that not very long ago because I reread it, and it's so about nature being the almighty, powerful healer and the energy that kind of keeps our world going. And I think the one thing that all my novels have in common is that they're very nature-centric. So I think definitely, actually. I only realised that just recently. So.
And I remember that about your writing at NIDA as well. It was always very beautiful and it kind of weaved in and out of nature and character. And it's one of the strongest, out of all those other writers that were there with us, you were definitely one of the stronger writers that stays in my memory, whose work stays in my memory.
I didn't feel like that at the time. I felt like one of the losers, but
Well, I think everybody at some point or other in the creative industry ends up feeling a little bit like a loser at particularly as time goes on, you know, as we're getting older, I think it creeps up a little bit more than it did when you were younger and you've got that feisty energy from youth that pushes you along. How much of you do you put into your work?
Oh gosh, I don't know. probably all of me.
What would you tell a new writer? What would you want them to know about?
Sorry, just going back to that question, that's a really revealing question to answer, but I'd say probably a lot of me.
Put in your the bad things as well as the good things?
Yeah, probably. I think it's really brave to be honest and truthful as a writer, but you know, if you can go there, then your work actually really sings off the page. So yeah, but I'm going to lie and say none of me. It's all fiction.
You know, the reason I ask that, because a lot of first-time writers, and you would remember this from sitting at those very big tables at NIDA, a lot of first-time writers say, oh, I'm not in it. That, you know, what I'm writing, I'm not in it. And as I've gone on writing as well, I know that I'm always in it somewhere there. And one of the reasons I asked you that was that I wanted to go back to your childhood, because I know that you were extremely shy as a child. And I'm just wondering if you could tell us how the arts helped you overcome that shyness.
Yeah, well, I only remembered I wanted to be a writer, you know, much later in life, because when I was a child, I actually wanted to be a writer, but I was so extremely shy. My parents sent me to speech and drama classes, and I ended up being an actor, I think, to overcome my shyness. I ended up being an actor for many years. It was only when I started writing seriously that I remembered, oh, I actually wanted to be a writer when I was a kid. And yeah, I got sidetracked into acting for quite a few years. But, no regrets because that has informed my writing and helped my writing substantially. It's all psychology, isn't it?
What do you miss about acting?
I don't actually miss anything about acting now. I did miss it at first, and I actually went back to it. I wrote myself a one-woman play. I had a break from it, and I started to really, get into playwriting. And then I was commissioned to write a monologue for the Brisbane Writers' Festival by Playworks. I remember I tried to get another actor to perform it because I said, look, I'll write it, but I'm not acting anymore. And anyhow, in the end, I ended up doing it, and it was so powerful to be up on the stage again. And yeah, I saw people in the audience crying, and I thought, oh, I should develop this into one. I got the bug again. So then I did the flowering for a few years, and yeah, but I don't miss anything about acting anymore. Writing is just, I love writing. Feel really fulfilled by writing.
What do you think,
Yeah.
Donna, makes a great story?
Oh, what makes a great story? Engagement. Engagement to the point where the reader or the audience is crying, laughing, really cares about the characters. Maybe a story that changes people's lives in some way.
Is that what you try and do with your work? I know because a lot of your work is centered around climate and the environment. Are you trying to change people in some kind of way, get them to have a different point of view about our environment?
I don't set out to change people. I write for myself. That sounds really selfish, but I write the book that I want to read, and it's usually a burning question I need answered. So it's an exploration of that question. The first one, Beneath the Mother Tree, was about my sense of belonging as a fourth, fifth generation, mainly Irish Australian. And then this book, The Rewilding, the question is, for me, it was, is there hope in the face of climate change? And that was such a burning question for me. If my book does change people in some way, that's great, but it's so much work. I can't not do it from a place of deep, need within myself. It's,
Do you know
well,
one of the
otherwise,
things?
why?
Yeah, why do it? Yes, I
Why
agree.
do it?
But
Because it's
that's
not
interesting because,
easy.
as you know, I turned up at your launch. One of the things you did say, and it really has stayed in my mind. You said, there's no money in writing. When I left the launch, I really thought about that statement, and I'm just wondering if there's no money in it, why do we do it? Or any writer, really, not just you or me. But what makes us, at our ages now, wanting to still be creative in some kind of way? What is it that drives us if it isn't money?
Well, I think if I don't explore those burning questions in me, then maybe I'd go mentally ill. I don't know. All I know is when I don't write, I start to get really just don't feel normal and right within myself. It's almost like it's a curse in a way, but it's also not a curse, but it's almost like I don't have a choice but to explore these things. Maybe there is money in it, for some, like a certain percentage of people make a lot of money. So maybe I'm a gambler too. Maybe I'm hoping that one day one of my books would take off or, but I think you can't write thinking, oh, I'm going to make money because then you'll just set yourself up for disappointment.
Yeah, look, I think that's true. I think most people write in some way as a form of therapy. Because I certainly know when I've spent hours writing something, there's something lifted from inside of you that other activities just doesn't do. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and going back to the acting thing, I think that immediacy of connection with humans, live theatre I'm talking, I do miss that, with the writing. It's when you hear from a reader saying, oh, I'm halfway through your book and I love this bit, or I've just finished your book and blah blah blah. And that's really special. But maybe it's that connection with human beings as well that drives us. And yeah, I do miss that about live performance. That immediacy.
Is it that there isn't that sort of immediacy with writing a book, is there?
No,
It's very,
yeah.
very different. I was wondering, with your first book, Beneath the Mother Tree, I was wondering if you got that feeling when you went around publicizing it. Does that give you a sense of theatre at all?
No, I find it all a bit nerve-wracking, I've got to say, because with acting, you can hide behind a character and it's easier, whereas you've got to kind of be yourself. I'm better at it this time around. If I get nervous, I wear a hat. I think with Beneath the Mother Tree, I didn't take my hat off once. This time, I've managed to take the hat off a couple of times. The hat just makes me feel like I'm Donna M. Cameron, the writer, and can hide behind it a bit if I feel a bit overwhelmed. Yeah, I can't say it's my favorite thing to do, the publicity thing.
Were you surprised with that first novel? Were you surprised at the amount of effort it took to get it out to the world?
Oh, yeah, it was a very rough road, the road to publication for me, especially the first time round. I had one of Australia's top agents pick it up and then they changed their mind on it. I had one of Australia's leading publishing houses very interested, and I stuffed up there because I didn't respond to an email. It's a very long story, but yeah, lots of heartbreak, lots of ups and downs, and it took me a long time to find a publisher for it. Yeah. This time it was a bit easier. Transit Lounge has been incredible. They're the most amazing publishing house, so I'm really happy with them.
Did you at
Yeah.
any point of time think of self-publishing? And if not, why was that off the table?
I think that was like plan B. If I couldn't find a publisher, I was thinking, yeah, maybe I'll just self-publish in the end. But I had enough interest from the start, even from Beneath the Mother Tree, and some really beautiful rejections that I knew there was something there that some publishing house would pick up. Yeah, I think with self-publishing, there is a stigma attached to it in the Australian publishing industry anyway, that it's a bit, you know, for amateurs or whatever. So, but which isn't the case because there's lots of amazing professional hybrid authors happening. And I can understand why people go hybrid because we only get 10% of the retail price with traditional publishing, whereas when you self-publish, you get all the money. I can imagine, you know, getting to, if you got to a stage where your books were really popular, you know, I suppose that that's when you start saying, I need more than 10%. And I think a lot of writers do that. Or they go hybrid and self-publish because they've got the readership following them then. So.
I remember going to hear a girl talk who had had a lot of success self-publishing. And one of the reasons she'd had so much success was that her book on Amazon was 99 cents.
Gosh.
I mean, it just blew my mind, you know? She'd sold
Yeah.
thousands and thousands and thousands of her copies of her book, but she'd sold it at 99 cents.
Well, I get $2 per book. When you think about it, it's actually not that much more. It's only like a dollar more. But the thing with self-publishing is the hard copies, you know, how do you get them into bookshops and libraries? Like you can do it online, digital, that's fine. But how do you get the real copies? You have to, I suppose, mail them out by your website. Just sounds like it'd be a lot of hard work.
I'm one of those people that I'm kind of torn. I like the idea of books as something to keep, but I've kind of surrendered to the idea of, you know, digital technology because it just gets things out there. I hear a lot of writers really wanting that to have that hard copy and, you know, to have a publisher, but you can reach many more people digitally these days, you know, if you're lucky.
Yeah, well, traditional publishers do digital as well. So, you know, both my books are available online digitally. But yeah, because I write mainly on screen, you know, via a computer all day, the last thing I want to do is read on screen.
What's your favorite
Yeah.
genre of books to read?
Well, genre's a tricky one. I don't really like the idea of genre, and I love writers who, you know, break those rules. I'm one of them. I don't really stay within a genre, but I suppose at the moment, it would be anything that deals with the climate crisis, because to me, that's the most burning issue that we have. Once we can solve that, everything else will fall into place.
Which
All the things that are happening around the world, it all comes back to climate change.
I said to a friend the other day, I don't know why I'm telling you this, but I said to a friend the other day, I'm conscious of climate change, definitely, and I do my best where I can. But I don't feel, at my age now, I am going to be able to save the planet. Where does your passion, because I heard you speak about this at the launch, where does your passion come from to continue to want to make a difference and definitely try and change the course of climate change?
It comes from a place of deep despair and grief, climate grief. The only way I can find hope is through action. So can't give up the fight, I suppose, because I'm a mum. That's a driving force. Yeah, I'm hearing you because I hear it all the time that people just feel like they can't do anything. There's so much we can do. If you go on my website, onto the rewilding page, donnamcameron.com, there's 10 simple things we can do as individuals that I've put up there. And they're really so simple, like divesting, buying food from your local food market instead of through Coles or Woolworths, you know, just really simple things. If we all do that, it would make a huge difference, everyone in rich countries.
What would you say to people who said to you, but it's just not convenient for me to go to a small grocery store over Coles or Woolies? What would you say?
A little bit of inconvenience now is going to stop the big inconvenience of what will unravel if we don't get a little bit inconvenient now. If we don't act, the weather's going to get really, really bad, and that's going to be very inconvenient because crops are going to fail and there will be no food, there'll be no water. You know, things will get really, really inconvenient.
I want to get on to the book in a second, but just running down, continuing down that same line, you were at the launch, you were quite passionate. I can't remember the young girl's name from Extinction Rebellion. You were quite passionate.
Violet Coco.
Yeah, what was her name again?
Violet Coco.
You were quite passionate about her cause. I think that week she'd blocked the Westgate Bridge in Melbourne, and a lot of people were very pissed off with her because she did that. And when I turned up at your launch, you had a totally different take on it. And I'm just wondering if you want to share that take with us, because I thought it was really fascinating, because I had been held up a little bit with a different cause in the city that delayed the trams, and I was really irritated, but you had a totally different take, and it really made me think when I left your launch.
I can't even remember what I said now, but I think these climate activists are the heroes of today, because if we don't act, things are going to get really, really bad for humanity.
So would you agree with civil disobedience? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you think that's the only way we can make a change?
No. That's one of the ways. Such a multi-headed beast. We need to attack it from all levels. And like I said, those 10 simple things we can do in rich countries as individuals is one of them. Climate activism is another. Signing those petitions, ringing your politicians, you know, all of it makes a difference. If we all just go, okay, what can I do? As an individual, what can I do? If we all just start thinking like that, and we will, because we'll have to. We're just going to probably be doing it at the 23rd hour, I'd say.
Do you think a lot of creative people at their heart are rebellious?
I think the good ones are, yep.
And would you say you're one of the good ones?
I don't know. Hopefully. I do know a lot of writers who write and I love them dearly, but you know, they're writing for different reasons. They're writing for money, for commercial success, for entertainment. Yeah, I wouldn't call them rebels.
What do you think is required to write a good novel?
I should have asked for these questions before this interview so I could sound really intelligent and insightful.
You sound intelligent.
These are hard questions. What was it? What makes a...
What was the ingredients of a good novel?
What's the ingredients of a good novel?
Little rebellion, yeah. I suppose, is one.
Yeah, that's... engagement. If the reader laughs and cries, and if they're changed in some way.
I was thinking what I would do is I'm going to read a couple of reviews of The Rewilding to you. Just let me know what you think at the end of it. Okay, The Rewilding, a breathless chase thriller with a warm ecological heart. The Rewilding, fiction at its rebellious, fast-paced best. The Rewilding. This one I really like. A gender bender page turner from an author of the highest caliber. What does that make you think and feel?
Oh, I think, those three writers just summed up the book beautifully. Yeah, I was really happy with those endorsements.
What's
Happy,
a...
made me feel happy.
I'm trying to get to what moves you as a writer. So a little bit of rebellion. You want to feel happy from your writing. Is there anything else that you'd want to feel as you're creating something?
Well, it's usually because I'm trying to understand or find something. So with The Rewilding, I was trying to find hope. With Beneath the Mother Tree, I was trying to find a sense of belonging. Bloomfield, I'm working on at the moment, is trying to explore the idea of community and how important community is. I suppose finding the answer to the question that's burning within me for each book.
So basically, you have a different, slightly different agenda every time you write, but
yeah.
there is definitely a theme which is running through it.
I think my books are definitely linked by being nature-centric. Nature is at the forefront of all of them so far. Even I'm taking notes for my fourth book, and the burning question in that book is something to do with love. I don't know what the question quite is yet, but definitely trying to understand the whole idea of love. Yeah.
What would you tell a first-time writer about the journey of publishing their first book, Donna?
Don't give up. Don't give up and believe in your book. Believe in your book, because I have some writer friends, it was a very easy journey for them, but most, like my journey, really, really difficult and lots of rejection. And if you don't believe in your book, no one else will.
What's your favorite writing moment in the last 10 years and why?
Oh, favorite, probably the big magic moment. So the night before Beneath the Mother Tree was going to print, I'd been up all night reading it for the last time, and I was walking to the beach. I was really stressed, just thinking, maybe I should just ring my publisher and tell her I don't want it published. I don't think it's good enough. And I stepped out onto the beach. I walked all the way to the beach. I stepped out onto the beach and I heard this flute. And the opening of Beneath the Mother Tree, the protagonist steps out onto the beach and hears this flute. And so I thought I was imagining it at first, because it was dawn and someone was playing a bloody flute and it was real. And it was this holiday house that's usually empty. There's an old man sitting on the veranda playing a flute, because I followed it. I just had to see if it was real. And I knew then it would be okay. The book would be all right and that it could get published. It was like a sign from the universe. So those big magic moments. I had one with The Rewilding as well.
Well, look, all I can say is that I think you've ended us, our podcast today, on a magic moment, and I'm going to spend the rest of the day thinking about my magic moments in life, and hopefully anyone listening to this podcast will be doing exactly the same thing after they hear your beautiful explanation of great moments. Donna, it's time to plug your book, so let's plug it.
Okay, so The Rewilding is a cat and mouse chase, a love story. It's also a love song for the world. It's a real page Turner. If you head to my website, there's been so many amazing reviews for it. The Weekend Australian called it glorious. So,
and it's in most bookstores?
All good bookstores.
Okay, Donna, you know what it is? It's that time of the podcast where I get to say to you that wonderful line. Are you ready for it? Yes. Donna M. Cameron, this has been your 15 minutes of fame.
Fame. Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed this podcast, Noel Anderson's 15 Minutes of Fame, remember to subscribe and share.